Oh, it's a philosophical kind of day around here today. Is climate change a business risk? Are superhero movies killing off movie stars? And how far would you go to not use cash? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Tuesday, the 24th of May. Great, as always, to have you with us, everybody. Two numbers with which to begin today. Number one is $89.67. Number two is $100.19. Interestingly enough, both of them up about 0.8% from where they started the day. Yes, we are talking stock prices, ExxonMobil and Chevron in that order, and I mention them because holders of those two companies' shares will be gathering for their annual meetings tomorrow, at which they will be considering resolutions obliging company management to disclose the risk that the companies face in the face of climate change. From the Sustainability Desk, Marketplace's Jed Kim gets us going.
Take a close look at your retirement investments. Chances are, part of your portfolio includes shares in oil and gas companies. That's because for a long time, oil has been a pretty safe bet. But as the world takes steps to reduce carbon emissions to mitigate climate change, renewable energy will take more of a role.
That's where the growth is. And that means that the sort of old fossil fuel infrastructure becomes, at some point, sort of abandoned and not valuable anymore.
Cynthia McHale directs the insurance program at Ceres. Her company put out a study today that shows the nation's top insurance companies have about $500 billion invested in fossil fuels.
They should be asking and pushing companies like Exxon and Chevron that they have a financial stake in around how are they managing given this clean energy transition that the world is undertaking.
That push is behind shareholders' votes, like the one Exxon is facing. Alan Jeffers is a spokesman for Exxon. He says it's already releasing this kind of info. And he says the future's bright for fossil fuels.
Despite people's wishes and aspirations to reduce the amount of carbon-based fuels, there's just no viable alternatives that are out there. The technology's not ready for them on a scale that the world needs.
He says, among other things, the developing world's need for energy keeps Exxon a safe bet in projections through 2040. But Dan Sperling at UC Davis says oil companies need to realize the future looks different.
In any scenario you look at, the growth in oil consumption will slow down, if not decline.
Sperling says the companies themselves will look different. More diversified products and fewer operations in rich countries, more in developing ones. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
If you're in New York and you get hungry and you order a Domino's pizza, there's a chance that the pizza guy or gal who made or delivered that pizza wasn't paid what they were legally owed for the hours they worked. The allegation is wage theft at 10 Domino's pizza joints. The alleger was New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman this morning. The claim is $565,000 in unpaid wages and other compensation for those workers. What makes this, though not your average run-of-the-mill wage theft case, is that Schneiderman's going after not just the owners of the individual Domino's franchises, but also Domino's itself, the parent company that licenses those franchises. It's a legal theory called joint employer, one that could wind up being applied to more companies in fast food and other industries, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports from our desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting.
So you roll into a Domino's, order some pizza, and the register person and pie slinger, they don't actually work for the Domino's Corporation, right? They work for a small business person who owns that Domino's franchise. Or maybe they work for both.
There are a broad range of circumstances in which a company can be found to be a joint employer.
Labor lawyer Michael Rubin has brought joint employer class action lawsuits against McDonald's and Walmart. The theory is that the big parent company is jointly responsible for wage theft, even if it doesn't sign the franchise workers' paychecks, when it provides tools that control the economic and labor conditions in the workplace.
If you have timekeeping software that you're requiring a contractor or a franchisee to implement, that enable them to monitor exactly what the workers are doing. The more the workers' actions are controlled, the more likely an entity is to be found a joint employer.
Domino's emailed us a statement saying it's the franchisees who are responsible for hiring, firing, and paying workers. Matt Haller of the International Franchise Association calls this joint employer theory an overreach.
The unions, and in some cases the trial attorneys, want to bring lawsuits against large brands because they see deep pocketbooks.
Catherine Ruckelshaus at the National Employment Law Project says wage theft is actually increasing, with more subcontracting and gigging out of low-wage jobs.
It's off-the-clock work. It's illegal deductions from pay. Just a problem that is very difficult to address given our current enforcement system.
And given how many layers of employers there are now, in everything from big box warehousing to office cleaning to fast food. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
A couple other corporate and economic odds and ends before we move on. Monsanto said nine, Danka, to Bayer's $62 billion buyout bid this morning. But the St. Louis-based agribusiness conglomerate said it would be happy to listen to a better offer. Thank you. For your What is Janet Yellen files, What is Janet Yellen Thinking files, man, it's my joke, I can't even get it right. For your What is Janet Yellen Thinking files, this item, new home sales had their biggest jump in 24 years last month to the highest level they've been since 2008, which is, as we all know, before the bottom really fell out. I mentioned Dr. Yellen, by the way, because one can hear, if one listens closely, a rising tide of, oh yeah, they are totally going to raise rates when they meet in June. 14th and 15th, by the way, is the next Fed meeting. On Wall Street today, a whole lot of green out there. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. This will come as small solace to the airline traveling public because it's not like the security lines are going to get shorter tomorrow. But the guy who runs security operations for the TSA has been replaced. We're not even at Memorial Day yet, and the backlogs at checkpoints in a lot of big city airports are already atrocious. There are predictions of record passenger traffic this summer. But in the meanwhile, the staffing budget for the TSA is the lowest it's been in 5 years. For you and me, that means getting to the airport hours and hours early. For airlines and airports, though, what are they supposed to do? Marketplace's Sally Herships has that story.
The problem with security delays at airports now is so bad, you don't even have to be a passenger to see it.
Does the line go past your store, or where does it?
Yeah, the line sometimes reaches like maybe Ruby Blue around there.
Kathy Perez works at Toomey, a luggage store at LaGuardia Airport, and she is pointing around a corner and down a corridor long enough to hold hundreds of frustrated passengers. Halfway across the country in Chicago, AJ Kaling got stuck in a similar line not too long ago at O'Hare Airport.
You kept on seeing people tapping shoulders of the people in front of them, asking if they, hey, my flight's leaving at this time, can I come ahead of you, can I just move ahead of you, my flight's leaving then. But all of our flights were leaving within like a 20-minute window, so we were all in the same position.
The line was so long, Kaling said it took him an hour and a half to get through, at which point he only had minutes to run to his gate.
It was like that scene from Home Alone where they're running through the terminal trying to make their gate. I got to the gate as they were closing the door, and they said no more passengers.
But passengers are not the only ones frustrated by delays at security. Airports don't like them because when passengers are stuck in line, they are not buying overpriced bags of chips. Then, of course, there are the airlines.
Do you hold that flight and possibly risk it being late into wherever it's going?
Henry Hardeveld runs a travel industry research company, Atmosphere Research. He says, on the one hand, empty seats cost airlines a lot. But on the other, so do flyers angry because their flight was held to wait for passengers stuck in long lines.
If you have 20 or 10 or 30 people for a flight that are have not yet shown up, but you know that they're in the airport, you show that they've checked in, do you leave those people behind? And if you do, how will you possibly get them to where they're going when your other flights are already full?
American Airlines is looking at bringing in contractors to help with non-screening functions, like directing traffic at checkpoints. The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey is threatening to privatize security. And Senator Chuck Schumer wants to increase the number of bomb-sniffing dogs to help reduce delays. But Hardeveld says, really, everyone's hands are tied by bureaucracy, including the TSA, which relies on Congress for its funding.
The TSA is a government agency. It is part of Department of Homeland Security. The airlines do not control TSA.
But it is the airlines that have to deal with the public.
When you have an upset customer, especially a customer that is traveling. Answering quickly is the most important condition.
Jay Baer is a customer service consultant. He says even though their hands are tied, the most important thing an airline can do is respond to grumpy passengers quickly. He says answering with empathy is next.
And then the third condition is to actually provide some sort of resolution.
But even if airports try to create a fix by privatizing security, there's an application process. Homeland Security needs to run a cost-benefit analysis, and that can take up to 6 months. The TSA says it's requesting more than 300 additional screeners in its next budget. But for now, you should plan to arrive at the airport 2 hours before domestic flights, which is what AJ Kaling did. Remember him, our traveler out of O'Hare? He had another flight this week.
Hi, Sally. It's AJ, officially through security in 23 minutes, leaving us about an hour and 45 before actual departure time. By my calculations, that means at least one Chili's margarita for me and my wife. Don't judge us. We're on vacation.
Airlines for America, the industry association, says it has two travel tips: enrolling in PreCheck to make the screening process faster and remembering to pack your patience. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
You've surely noticed, standing in line at the grocery store, or pretty much anywhere really, that there's a whole bunch of different ways to pay for whatever it is you're buying. Cash, but that is so boring. You could swipe or chip nowadays. There are apps as well. And then, at some point in the perhaps not too distant future, just waving your hand in front of a reader because you've gotten a chip implanted in your hand. Charlie Warzel did that, a tiny grain of rice-sized chip in that fleshy bit right between his index finger and his thumb, and he wrote about it for BuzzFeed. Charlie, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
How did this project start? Were you looking to get this chip in your hand, or was there something else going on?
I wasn't at all. So this project initially started as a look at the future of money. And as money goes digital and we start using our phones to pay for things, I wanted to know not only where we are, but where we're going, and you know how much hype is actually real, and how much is is nothing more than the classic Silicon Valley hype.
And it turns out there's a lot of hype, because one of the things you say early on in this article is that the piecemeal fragmentation is your word of being able to pay with something other than cash, right? Between the apps you got to download and the things you got to figure out, it's just not easy.
Yeah, exactly. And it really – what I think of it as sort of there's a bit of a gold rush going on with this. And what it really is for more than anything else is to get your data. That's why you have Starbucks coming out with its own way to help you pay for things. And you have Walmart Pay, all these different entities, because they want to understand your purchasing behavior and capture a lot of that information.
Let's get back to the chip, because that's the sort of the hook for this story.
Sure.
You wind up going to Sweden, where they have where they're light years ahead of us in peer-to-peer stuff, and you wind up getting a chip put in your hand, man. What?
Yeah. So I didn't really expect to do it, but when I sort of looked into some of the innovation sectors over in Sweden, and there's a group of biohackers that are working to kind of test the future of implants and this RFID technology, which is the same thing that's in our phones that allows us to do Apple Pay and Samsung Pay, all those things. And I kind of figured that, you know, for this experiment, this would be the absolute furthest reach of what could be possible. So I found a biohacker who was really kind of nonchalant about wanting to or allowing me to be microchipped.
Once you got this chip in you, it was not as simple as swiping your hand next to an Apple Pay kiosk thing, right?
Right. So this chip is really it's more of like an experiment, a placeholder for a future that I think someday we could possibly see. And so I when I got the chip, I had to get it programmed. So I started sending out feelers to different people and finally found an engineer who at the time was at Venmo. He's since moved on to more entrepreneurial projects, but he helped me sort of take Venmo's, you know, unique code, place it onto my chip, and then we kind of set up a system at a restaurant where I could actually use it to pay.
In an extremely jury-rigged fashion, we should say. I mean, it took some doing.
Absolutely. This is not something that normal people can really go out and do yet, and probably for a long time.
Have you gone back to cash since you got back from Sweden?
The first thing that I did when my month-long experiment ended was go to the ATM and take out all just a wad of unnecessary cash, and it just felt very safe and secure to me.
And what about the chip? Is it still there?
The chip is there.
Do you beep going through security and stuff?
No. I'm a little worried about going to get an MRI. That's the only thing. But other than that, it's kind of a fun party trick, I think.
Can you feel it, like if you like touched your thumb or wherever the thing is?
Sure. If I kind of make a fist with my hand, you can kind of see the outline of it. It looks like there's a kind of a grain of rice under my skin. It kind of freaks people out.
Yeah, I bet. Charlie Warzel, he writes on technology for BuzzFeed. Charlie, thanks very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up,
it is costing us something that used to really mean something and was special about movies in general.
The case against superhero movies, but first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 213 points today, 1.2%, 17,706. The NASDAQ jumped 95 points, 2%, 4861. The S&P 500 added 28 points, 1.3%, 2076. The Nordson Corporation, it makes precision adhesive dispensing systems, up 15% after reporting strong earnings. Illinois Tool Works, which makes arc welders, fasteners, and other industrial products and equipment, rose 1.6% today. The John Bean Technologies Corporation designs frozen food processing systems and provides airport ground support. Sales up nearly 20%, shares up 3.6% today. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 1.86%. Come on, capitalism, right? You're listening to Marketplace.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The 2015-2016 season on Broadway has pretty much wrapped up, and it was a record year. More than 13 million theatergoers shelled out $1.3 billion to see live theater. That's according to the Broadway League. It's a trade association that tracks all of that data. The caveat, of course, and this year especially, is that not all shows are created equal. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson looks at the state of Broadway.
This is not just a Hamilton story. The long-running Lion King musical grossed over $100 million last season, compared with $74 million for Hamilton, which got a later start and is in a smaller theater. But there's no question that Hamilton was a big factor in the year's success. Charlotte St. Martin is the president of the Broadway League.
Whenever we have a big hit, attendance seems to grow in other shows as well. And this year we had a record-breaking 11 new musicals, many of which are doing extremely well.
Which is not to say that all productions are feeling the love. David Cody is theater editor at Time Out New York.
Plays often have a hard time making their money back because there's just not as much excitement about a new drama. That's why you see a lot of plays on Broadway that have to have a star in the lead, such as David Mamet's latest play, which is called China Doll, which starred Al Pacino.
It sold well, even though critics really didn't like it. Jack Viertel is senior vice president at Jujamson Theaters, which owns 5 Broadway theaters.
For many, many years, people talked about how the business was dying. No one's talking about that anymore.
He says now it seems there's more money pouring into theater.
I do think it's harder and harder to find a theater to play in because plays and musicals are running so long. that they occupy theaters for much longer than they did in earlier eras.
But that's a better problem to have than empty seats. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
We talk to Wesley Morris from the New York Times every now and then, mostly about movies, sometimes about popular culture, and other times, like today, about both. His most recent piece is headlined, "The Superhero Franchise Where Traditional Movie Stardom Goes to Die," which kind of piqued my interest, so we called him up. Wesley, good to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you, Kai. What's happening?
Not much, except this whole thing that you wrote about superhero franchises and how you don't really like them much. What gives?
Okay, here's the exact situation.
Yes.
I don't mind the superhero franchise in theory.
Yeah, huh.
But in reality, what it's doing is it's ruining this whole other aspect of movie going for me, which is the experience of movie stars, which I love. I love movie stars. And I love going to the movies to watch stars work out and work on their persona. And that is directly in conflict with what the superhero movie is all about, which is a genre that basically features its own stars.
Yeah, the character you write is more famous than the actor.
Yes, yes. And your stardom gets messed up in the process. That's very depressing.
What about the opportunities that it provide, that these kinds of movies provide for black actors specifically is what you talk about, but others who might not have a chance at being in one of these ginormous films?
That is, I mean, there are a number of interesting counter, like mini counter arguments to my larger cultural and philosophical
That's what I'm
problem.
Doing. I'm giving you mini counter arguments.
Right. I mean, I think that the way it's been good for black actors, especially if Chadwick Boseman, if this Black Panther movie actually happens for an actor like Chadwick Boseman, who plays the Black Panther in this current Captain America movie, Civil War, it's really great because I don't know what Chadwick Boseman would be cast in otherwise. He was really good as James Brown. He was incredible as James Brown. He was a good Jackie Robinson. And this is a guy whose fame is now bound up in other famous people and other famous characters. The downside, of course, is that he'll be probably forever known, if these movies are a hit, as Black Panther.
Let me get you back to where we started, this idea of movie stars. There is no more movie star-ish movie star today than George Clooney. And he's got a new movie out, Money Monster, with Julia Roberts. And that movie, you say, basically makes you sad, right?
Well, nostalgic and, like, yeah, simultaneously nostalgic and sad. It makes me nostalgic for a time when a movie like Money Monster came out every week. It did not have to win all the Oscars. It didn't even have to go near the Academy Awards. And it was a perfectly good diversion, the way movies have always been. The thing that makes me sad about it is, you know, as good as Julia Roberts and George Clooney are in this movie, the thing that they're doing in it is they're making TV, which sort of points to this other place that movies, that movie stardom and, you know, popular culture in general, in terms of the quality and diversity of stuff on offer, is headed.
All right. So look, I'm a huge fan of you and your writings and your viewpoint on this issue. But I wonder if you're out of step with what America wants to see in a movie. They want to go and watch stuff get blown up. They want to see these superheroes.
I think my point is really just that one of the side effects of this type of movie that everybody loves, that is the biggest genre of movie in the world, and in the history of the world, probably by the time this is all said and done, is that it is costing us something that used to really mean something and was special about movies in general. And I think unless you're going to start casting Iron Man in your romantic comedies, you know what I mean? Or like casting Wolverine in your legal dramas, I think you really have to sort of think about what it means to let a single genre of movie sort of predominate and dictate the terms of the characterization and the charisma of the people in the movies. That's kind of a worrisome thing to look outward and to see that with fewer movies being made, this single type of movie is dominating not only the box office, but just the cultural conversation too.
Wesley Morris writes on movies and a bunch of stuff in the New York Times. I don't usually argue with him, but I just wanted to have it out on this piece. I enjoyed it, man. Thanks.
I love talking to you. You can push back anytime.
Speaking of superheroes, our podcast Actuality has the story of the guy who bought the rights to Batman back in his 20s and spent years trying to get somebody to actually make the thing into a movie. It's a good story, and you can get Actuality wherever you get your podcasts. This final note on the way out today, getting us back to airplane travel whence we came. And there's a twist, I guess you could say. Lufthansa's got something interesting they're doing. It's called Lufthansa Surprise. It goes like this. You buy a ticket, the airline decides where you go. I'm serious. You can put some parameters on there so it's not totally blind, but still, right? Hi, Kai Rizdahl here. Thanks for listening to this Marketplace podcast. We give you the context you need to understand what's happening in the economy and why it matters to you. So here's some context on us. We're a nonprofit service, and we rely on donations from our listeners to keep on going. And we've just made special Let's Do the Numbers Pilsner glasses available to thank you for your support. So please, donate today at marketplace.org. All right, got to go. The Dow up 213 points today, 1.2%. The NASDAQ up 95 points, that is 2%. The S&P 500 added 28 points, 1.3%. Caitlin Esch is the producer on our Wealth and Poverty Desk. Our digital team includes Nishat Kerwa, Donna Tam, and Tony Wagner. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.